It's been a rough time for high-profile tech startups to go public. WeWork's IPO valuation dropped by more than 80% in recent weeks. The fitness company Peloton saw shares tumble after its IPO in September. And there have been comparisons to the dot-com bubble of 2000. Here's Jim Cramer on CNBC last month.
You have to be skeptical of markets, entire markets, where more and more stocks are valued on something other than earnings. This is what happened during the dot-com crash. You had tons of companies that were trading on eyeballs and page clicks. Needless to say, that suspension of rigor did not end well.
Well, our next guest says we are not headed for another dot-com bubble. Derek Thompson is senior editor at The Atlantic, where he's written about this. He joins us now. Hi, Derek.
Hey, Jeremy.
Well, first of all, why are we seeing so many comparisons now to the 2000 tech bubble?
There's a lot of similarities. You know, both then and now, you had a lot of consumer tech companies that were spending lavishly on advertising and that couldn't find a profit. Both then and now, you had companies that were bragging about their ability to change the world and bragging about the number of users they were adding on a quarterly basis, even though they were quietly running out of money. And both then and now, you had valuations of heralded tech enterprises that were soaring and then suddenly halving in a matter of weeks. So I don't begrudge people who are seeing the parallels.
But you say that what's happening now is not like the dot-com bubble.
No, it's the exact opposite, in fact. So it's first important to understand exactly what the dot-com bubble was. It was a public mania. In the 1990s, unprofitable internet companies were going public, and then ordinary mom-and-pop investors were piling in. They were buying stock on public stock markets like the NASDAQ and driving up the valuations of these companies that weren't actually businesses. So in the dot-com bubble of 2000, public investors got hosed. But today, it's public investors that are doing the hosing. And lots of companies that are trying to go public are getting slaughtered at the gates. So Peloton, for example, the spinning company, goes public and its stock price plummets. Same for Lyft. It goes public and its stock price immediately plummets. Same for Uber. WeWork's valuation fell so fast that when it announced intentions to go public, its valuation dropped by about 80% in 3 weeks, and it withdrew its public offering in the first place. So it's the exact opposite of the dot-com bubble. It's not public companies that are losing valuations and thus costing public investors trillions of dollars. Rather, it's private companies whose private investors are hoping that they'll get a lot of money on public markets, but public markets are rejecting them in the first place.
Well, and the companies that you just named there, WeWork, Peloton, even you could say Uber and Lyft, are not really tech companies, as you point out. You call this a not-com bubble.
Yes, I say it's not a dot-com bubble. It's a not-com bubble because these companies have tech layers, but they're not entirely tech companies. Peloton sells a bike that exists in the physical world. It weighs a lot of pounds. It costs a lot of money. Lyft and Uber spend a lot of their money on human drivers. WeWork is essentially a real estate business that's asking for a tech multiple. So these companies are, at the end of the day, based in the physical world of bikes that weigh a lot and humans you have to pay based on American labor law and real estate that is enormous and costs a lot of money. They're not software companies. They're not pure tech companies. And it turns out that pure tech IPOs have actually been really strong for the last few years. You know, these are companies you probably haven't heard of, like Zscaler and Anaplan. You know, they sell mostly B2B software or cloud services. They're not sexy. They're pure B2B software or cloud service companies. And they, in fact, are much more successful in stock markets than the Lyfts and the Ubers.
But we do remember that in the dot-com bust, it affected the whole economy. Would a failure by these not-com companies pose a risk to the broader economy?
I don't think so. I think these are pretty small companies compared to the entire economy. I mean, you have the U.S. economy, which is, I don't know, like $17 trillion, and you have these companies that have billions of dollars of investments in them, but they're not a huge part of the U.S. economy. They're not a huge part of any sector of the economy, really. I also don't think that a company like Uber or Lyft is going to implode. You could say that with WeWork, there's a concern about WeWork going bankrupt and then what happens to all this commercial real estate that they own in places like New York and Boston. Boston. But again, the Atlantic's CityLab has actually done some reporting on this, and it doesn't look like that's going to be much of a catastrophic implosion either. I just don't think that what we're looking like, even though it's sort of exciting and sad to talk about, is anything like a dot-com bubble, which wiped out trillions and trillions of dollars of wealth.
But whatever happens to these companies, the disruption has already happened in the case of Uber and Lyft. In many cases, they have destroyed taxi industries. So if their business model doesn't work out, there's no really going back, is there?
I think that's a fair point. Yeah. I mean, even if the value of Uber might drop from, you know, $100 billion, which it initially got, to $50 billion, to $10 billion, but that doesn't change necessarily the availability of ride hailing. I think that's pretty much here to stay. I think what's most, you know, catastrophic, the biggest impact this is probably going to have is on employees. You know, WeWork is about to fire thousands of people, and Uber and Lyft have fired hundreds, maybe even thousands themselves. You know, the misallocation of capital by private investors is bad for people who work for these companies.
Derek Thompson, senior editor at The Atlantic. Thanks as always.
Thank you.